재미와 지식의 오디오라이프 팝빵.
Time for International News Digest. We begin in the United States, where President-elect Donald Trump has selected Peter Navarro, an economist known for his extreme anti-China stance, to head a trade policy council within the White House. And Navarro is an academic and one-time investment advisor who's written a number of books and produced a film describing China, the world's second-largest economy, as a threat to the United States. A lot of people worrying whether this appointment could further dampen political and trade relations between the two global powers. To give us some analysis on the Navarro pick, as well as some of the other subsequent picks he's made for his advisory role or cabinet, we are very pleased to have joining us once again from Asan Institute for Policy Studies Research Fellow, Dr. James Kim. Hello.
Hi, Henry.
Hello to you, sir. Thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me.
For the benefit of our listeners, Dr. Kim, could you just give us some background information on who Peter Navarro is?
So, as you point out earlier, he is a professor of political economy at UC Irvine Business School. He's about 67 years old. Harvard PhD with an MPA from the Kennedy School as well. He's written several books, Crouching Tiger, What China's Militarism Means for the World, 2015, and then his most famous book, Death by China, published in 2011, that actually put him in touch with Donald Trump. Donald Trump read his book and commented on it, and Professor Navarro wrote a letter subsequently thereafter. And they've kept in touch, but he hasn't been a formal advisor for President-elect Donald Trump until September of this year, and he's maintained that role. As you point out, he has a fairly critical view of China on both economic and on security front, and so this is a fairly interesting pick.
The question is whether this is more of a symbolic, maybe an in-your-face gesture to China. Of course, already right now with the situation with the Taiwan president phone call and this drone incident where these tweets by Donald Trump and a very, I suppose, candid response by China back and forth really is not sort of setting the relationship off in a good direction initially. What do you think as far as this pick is concerned? Is this something that will actually be realized in trade policy, whether it's protectionism or a full-on trade or currency war, or do you think this is really more of a symbolic pick?
I think it's, like I said, I think it's a very interesting pick, but one that doesn't definitively lock the Trump administration into a single policy on trade. Trump also has his pick of pro-free traders in his team, and he just also announced Carl Icahn, who favors free trade, Gary Cohn, who was the former head of Goldman Sachs for the National Economic Council, is also free trader, and then, you know, his state secretary pick, Rex Tillerson, Terry Barnstead for the ambassadorship to China. But it certainly does add an element of inconsistency or schizophrenia into his policy advisory circle. So it's a very interesting pick.
Yeah, and there's an interesting diversity of choices here just from background as far as some of these cabinet picks that we've seen. Secretary of HUD would be Dr. Ben Carson, the noted neurosurgeon who was also a presidential candidate. You mentioned Tillerson for Secretary of State, known for his close ties with Vladimir Putin and Russia. Labor Secretary being Andy Puzder, Stephen Mnuchin, who we've talked about in the past, for Treasury Secretary, known as the foreclosure guy, I suppose, right now during the housing crisis. Is this, do you see a pattern with these picks in terms of them being sort of kind of business related, or do you think that there is any set strategy, or this is all kind of random and kind of play by the wind?
Well, I think he does have more business background sort of non-Washington insiders involved here than some of the others that we've seen in the recent past, at least. So it brings a sort of a business mindset to management of government agencies. It's a kind of bottom lines, result-oriented approach that we often see in businesses that we're not used to seeing in government. So does this mean that the government will perform more efficiently? I'm not sure whether these individuals are going to be better or even as good as some of the other sort of lifetime bureaucrats or diplomats or politicians that we've seen heading up these agencies. So it certainly makes for a very unpredictable few years. And so we're in a sort of an uncharted territory here. And it makes it, on the one hand, exciting. On the other hand, there are some people that are obviously a little worried that, you know, this may come with some hiccups, that unintended consequences and policy choices that could potentially be very negative. But again, you know, the confirmation hearing has to go forward. These people have to be confirmed for cabinet posts. Obviously, the advisory roles are simply that. They're advisory positions in White House. And so I think we'd have to wait and see. But it certainly doesn't add any element of predictability in the coming years.
Right. I mean, it keeps us engaged because we are fascinated by what's going to happen.
That's right.
Once
exactly.
He takes office. You mentioned confirmation, and you're right. Guys like Steve Bannon, senior White House advisor, people like General Michael Flynn, national security advisor, even a pick like Navarro, those are pretty much set in stone because they do not require congressional oversight or approval.
That's right.
These other picks, though, particularly Mnuchin for Treasury and Tillerson for Secretary of State, I've read that there certainly will be Democratic opposition, particularly for Mnuchin and Tillerson even, where there is going to be a sense that even some of these very anti-Russia, hawkish U.S. senators like McCain, like Graham, like even a Rand Paul would be very much opposed to these kind of picks.
That's right. So, and it's not only those individuals. You're going to have some problems with James Mattis as well. There's a 7-year limit. Essentially, any sort of individual from the military that have held positions in the military in order to switch over into a civilian post would have needed a 7-year gap between the time that he's finished his service to the time that he or she takes on the civilian service duty. He doesn't meet that requirement. So in order to change that, Congress will have to pass an amendment or a law that will allow him to take up that position. Again, the Democrats, there are many Democrats who have signaled that they're not going to be supporting that kind of legislative change. So this is, he's got a fight on his hands. It'll be interesting to see whether these cabinet appointments are going to go through, how these individuals will perform during the hearings. It will keep us very much engaged, as you point out.
From the Trump voters' perspective, the guy that they ushered in to bring about this change to MAGA, right? Make America Great Again. And that very famous term that they all decried, drain the swamp. From that voter's perspective, with an all-white, all-male, well, for the most part, billionaire club of guys, business guys taking over, would that be draining the swamp or filling the swamp? They're not lobbyists, they're not technocrats and all that, but I suppose that perspective may differ depending on the Trump voter, right?
Right. So there's some people that are saying that Trump's drained one swamp and filled another one. So created another one, or rather. So you could look at it in different ways. But again, like I said, it certainly brings an element of a business mindset to government management that we haven't seen in the past. And whether this will actually have impact in changing how these bureaucratic agencies work and operate, for instance, on intelligence, as we've seen in the past, Intelligence agencies often have competing interests. They often compete with one another, and sometimes they're not able to cooperate on sharing intelligence with each other. And we've seen some of the problems that could lead to, like 9/11, for instance. So these are some areas maybe where we might see improvements, but then again, will we see improvements on as a whole on net? Will these changes actually lead to a better kind of governance or not? That's something that we're going to have to wait and see.
We will indeed. Dr. Kim, it's always a pleasure to have you, and we wish you a Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.